Hi, everybody. It's Joanna. I hope you're all doing really, really well. And I'm so happy to be here with all of you today. We are continuing this kind of module that we've been in since we stepped into Energetics 2, Resistance Archetypes, Befriend Your Fear, Negative Thought Patterns, kind of like the more advanced techniques and tools and ideas beyond, you know, those really important basics of, you know, listening skills, creating awareness, questioning, strategizing, visioning, but like really this whole module are these more advanced tools and more specialized tools and ideas and understandings, pieces of knowledge and wisdom to help you help your clients, particularly when they're stuck, right? When an obstacle has come up, when they get stuck in a pattern, you know, when they get stopped in their tracks in the process, all of that. And so today we're going to be diving into the wheel, helping clients get off the wheel of self-sabotage. So, you know, what I just want to say before we get into the meat of it is that what I'm trying to do, like my purpose in this whole module, is to give you a really nice toolbox to have for when clients come up against obstacles, because inevitably clients will come up against obstacles or else they wouldn't have really needed to hire you. This is something, the toolbox that I'm giving you is basically something that no other coach trainings do. They give those basic skills and that's it, but I just see how important it is as coaches for us to really understand what's going on for people when they have obstacles, when they get stuck, and to have different tools to be able to move them through it. So I'm just, my purpose is to give you different angles, different ways in, different ways of understanding obstacles and stuck places or when clients just don't move forward, so that you have different things to choose from when you're working with your clients. Because it's not like, you know, as we keep on coming back to in Sacred Depths, we always want to coach the who based on the what, right? And each who is a little different. And even for each individual person, depending on where they're at in the process, things are going to look a little bit different. So we can't just have one cookie cutter tool. I'm trying to give you lots of different tools to choose from. The other piece I want to mention is that our human brains want to try to compartmentalize, to just put all of these into nice little categories. Like, this is when fear comes up, this is what I do. I do the Befriend Your Fear process. When there are negative thought patterns that come up, I'm going to go through the rewiring, you know, the rewire your negative thought patterns process. And sometimes it is that simple, but the truth is, like, our brains just want to tie things up into just neat little bows, right? Joanna, just tell me exactly what to do when this happens, and tell me exactly what to do when that happens. But I can tell you that after 20 years of coaching and working deeply with human beings, if you think about this in a compartmentalizing way, like I only use the Befriend Your Fear process when fear comes up, it's going to be counterproductive. It will be much more effective for you as the coach and much more effective for your clients if you embrace the messiness, if you understand that there are thousands of different scenarios that a client can bring to you, and that there are lots of different ways to move forward, not just one. And if you have this toolbox, you can pick what you sense is the right way to move forward in any given moment. It's similar to what I was sharing last week when we had our practicum and our modeling around the befriend your fear process and the rewiring process. You guys saw it then. I couldn't, in any of the modeling that I did, follow the processes step by step by step by step, right? In order to be most effective, I needed to be there in the moment and have a full toolbox of ideas and strategies to choose from in order to move the clients forward. So again, it's not a science, it's an art. Never go in with expectations on what methodology you're going to use. You'll see as we move through helping clients get off the wheel of self-sabotage today that the content that we look at is very much connected to resistance archetypes, to shadow, for those of you that were at the shadow retreat with me, to befriending fear, to negative thought patterns. They're all interconnected. And I think what's going to happen today is it'll bring a lot of it together in a really beautiful way. That's my hope, and that's my intention. All right, so with all that, let's dive in. First thing is just what is self-sabotage? You know, when I use the term getting off the wheel of self-sabotage, before we even get to the wheel, what do I mean by self-sabotage? I just want to define that, just so that we're all on the same page. So the way I'm using self-sabotage here is when your client consciously or unconsciously gets in the way of achieving her own goals and desired evolution. I'll say that again. Self-sabotage is when your client consciously or unconsciously gets in the way of achieving her own goals and desired evolution. Now, when we think about self-sabotage, I want us to think about it in two different categories, or there's basically like two different buckets that any kind of client self-sabotage is going to fall into. The two buckets are, I call them single occurrence self-sabotage, or we can even call that like explicit self-sabotage, the single occurrence. And then the second category or bucket I call patterned self-sabotage or subtle self-sabotage. So we've got single occurrence, which is more explicit, or we've got patterned, which is more subtle. So let's look at single occurrence first. Single occurrence self-sabotage is exactly what it is. It is like it happens kind of in an isolated incident, if you will. So here are examples of single occurrence self-sabotage. You show up late for a very important meeting that you have, right? You show up late, it's self-sabotage. Here's another example. You have a big test, your client has a big test coming up, or a deadline, you know, whatever it is, and they didn't study for it. They stayed out late instead the night before. A single occurrence self-sabotage or explicit, something that's just obviously self-sabotage, your client tells somebody off in a really inappropriate way and then cuts off opportunities for themselves, not because they stood up for themselves, but because they did it in a really inappropriate way. Another example, this is one from my own experience. I have done this. This has been more than single occurrence for me, but it's not a it's still fits into the single occurrence. you have an important presentation or an important event and you don't buy clothing for, you don't know what you're going to wear for it until the last minute, and you sabotage yourself that way. That has happened to me many times. Another example of explicit self-sabotage is you don't want to get pregnant, and yet you don't use birth control. Showing up for an appointment on the wrong day, not preparing for an enrollment conversation, right? I'm sure you can think of many more examples. Now, patterned self-sabotage or subtle self-sabotage, they're not isolated events, right? It's not like, okay, here was this one big meeting and I showed up late, but they're more like these little things that happen maybe every day or every week that could just be overlooked as, well, that's just how things are, or that's how they have to be, or I didn't have another choice, right? But they're slowly eating away at your client's ability to achieve goals and to achieve the growth and experience that they want. So here are some examples of the patterned or the more subtle self-sabotage. Your client consistently stays up too late, right? We may not, from the outset, think of staying up too late as self-sabotage in the same way of, like, showing up late for a really important meeting is, right? Like, that's so explicit with the meeting. But, you know, maybe you've got a client who's just in the pattern of staying up too late, but then because she stays up too late every night or most nights, she doesn't have enough energy during the day to do the things that she wants to do. Or maybe you've got a client who consistently overschedules herself, right? Again, if someone that consistently overschedules themselves, if you don't understand the nature of self-sabotage, you may not see that as self-sabotage right away, right? It's just like, oh, she's busy. She's got a lot on her plate, right? But what happens is she consistently overschedules herself, and then she doesn't have enough space or bandwidth to really not only feel good, but get to the things that she wants to do. Another example might be someone who consistently doesn't follow up when they get referrals, or like they follow up, but in a kind of like a half-assed way, right? And then those referrals don't become clients. Or maybe there's a particular protocol that they, business protocol, or whatever it is that they want to accomplish, that they just don't follow consistently. An example from business coaching is like someone who, when I teach enrollment conversations, they kind of do some of the things that you're supposed to do in the enrollment conversation process, but they consistently don't do one of the pieces, like activate gap or whatever it is. Here's another example of the more subtle self-sabotage. Someone who doesn't fill up on their printer ink, right? And, you know, it's just like they never have enough printer ink, and then they run around the night before an event when they should be resting to try and find printer ink because they've got things that they have to print. Here's I'll give one more example of the patterned. Someone who maybe eats a food that they're sensitive to, even though they know that it doesn't do well in their system. Like, let's say you're kind of sensitive, I'm kind of sensitive to quinoa. And if I eat it, I don't go into anaphylactic shock or anything like that, but I just don't feel well for a couple of days as I eat it, right? If I were to do that consistently or even semi-consistently, that's a subtle way of sabotaging myself, because when I don't feel well after I eat it, even though I know better and even though I have tons of other food options, when I don't feel well, I'm not at my best. Okay. So taking into consideration these two different buckets of self-sabotage, let's pause here for a moment. I've got a couple of journaling questions for you. So first question, think about that first bucket, the single occurrence or the explicit self-sabotage. What are one or two examples from your own life, you know, from yourself, of times that it's been explicit sabotage, like a single occurrence thing where it's just undeniable sabotage, self-sabotage for you? Write down at least one or two examples. Take one more moment with that. And then next question, think about that more subtle self-sabotage, that like kind of that patterning. You know, it's not necessarily that you do it every day, right? But like you do it pretty consistently from the outside, someone who didn't know better. It might not look like self-sabotage. You could give a really great excuse, you know, reason for why it's not, but it actually is. So name, you know, one or two examples of that patterned or that subtle self-sabotage for you that you recognize in your own self and in your own life. Everybody, all of us, no matter how evolved we are, have at least one or two of these going on for us. All right, next question. I want you to think about your clients, or if not your clients, then family members. Or friends, what are some of the either explicit single occurrence or more subtle or patterned ways that they self-sabotage? So particularly if you have clients, I want you to focus on clients so you can, you know, pick it out. And it may be things that you've discussed with clients, or it may be things that you actually haven't discussed yet, but now that you're thinking about self-sabotage a little bit more in this way, you can see it. If not clients, you can just do this practice with family or friends. Maybe pick one or two friends or family members. And then last question for right now, back to yourself, back to the examples that you wrote down in terms of explicit self-sabotage or some of that more subtle or patterned. I want you to pick one, one instance of self-sabotage that's maybe pressing for you right now, that you're starting to see it and you're like, ugh, yeah, like I... staying up way later than I should be consistently, and you know that's really sabotaging me, or you know whatever it is, whatever you're seeing for yourself, pick one. And my question for you is, what's the fear or the limiting belief behind the self-sabotage action. So, for example, if you consistently are staying up too late, why? What's the root there? What's the fear or the belief that's causing you to consistently stay up too late? And sometimes it's not, you're not going to see it right away. That's related to the wheel, which we'll get to in a moment. But see if you can detect that for yourself. What's the fear, the belief behind it? All right. I'd love to hear from a couple of you. What are you seeing so far for yourself? Star two. What's coming up to the surface for you? Star two. I think this is this Nicole? Nicole, is that you? Or maybe that's Ruth.
It's Ruth.
Hi, Ruth.
Hi. So what I'm seeing for myself is I have been trying to redesign my program, but I keep not doing it, and I keep leaving it to the last minute. And it's like started in about 3 weeks, and I still haven't like put everything together. Each time I want to work on it, I find other things to do.
Yeah.
And yeah. So looking at it now, I think the fear behind it is thinking that I need to like know more, or maybe I don't know enough.
I don't know enough. I have to do some prep for this program, but there's this kind of like underlying fear of like, maybe I'm not going to do it the right way. I don't know enough how to make it better or up level it. And so then you just keep on putting it off, and then it doesn't get done. Yeah.
Exactly.
Good. I'm so glad you're seeing that. And I promise you, we won't leave you hanging as we continue on with the content. You'll see more what to do with that. But I'm glad that that's coming to the surface and you're having that awareness.
Yeah.
Good.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Adina.
Hi. So I have very much a self-sabotage pattern with regard to sugar, which I know that I just cannot process, and yet I continue to, you know, go through cycles where I'm really good about eliminating it and just, you know, all of that, and then I go through cycles where I just put it into my body and with bad consequences for how I feel and how I'm able to function. And what I saw looking at it, which I probably was aware of on some level, but, you know, just sort of some clarity around it, that I had, like, very early in adulthood a lot of, history with eating disorders and just a lot of deprivation, and that having, you know, come through that and overall, you know, into a very healthy, well-rounded lifestyle, there's sort of that piece where I feel like it sort of symbolizes deprivation to cut that out, you know?
Yeah.
And so I'll have these moments where it's like, I just want to eat the cookies, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But
yeah,
I know
so
how it completely shuts down my system, you know.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I'm so glad you can see that, or if you've seen that before, that you're honing in on it. I'm glad for you, but also that you're bringing it forward, because I think it's such a common one, right? Like,
it is.
If I don't have this sugar, I'm depriving myself. And I'd say, like, another take on that limiting belief is the only way for me to derive pleasure in this moment is if I have that cookie.
Right.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad
Thanks.
That you're seeing that. I know, it's a biggie.
Yeah.
Good. All right, let's hear a couple more. Tina.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. This one was pretty big for me, actually. I could feel the fear in my heart space about it. So I haven't been consistently meditating, and it's so key for my mind, my body, my health, absolutely everything. And I have just found everything under the sun to distract myself, like, because I only have time at night. I mean, that's the story. And then I'm tired. I'm so tired. And I fall asleep every single time I try to meditate. So then I'm just like, well, what the hell? What's the point? But then I feel so much better when I do it. It's kind of like, you know, going to yoga. It's the same thing. But this one's big for me. And I don't know. I'm really, really, really having a hard time. I'm up against a lot of, factors. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I hear you. I'm sorry you're having a hard time, but I'm actually glad that this is bringing you face to face with the discomfort. I promise, like, I'm not going to keep you hanging. We're going to move into, like, how to start to work with this. But it's such another great example, right? You know that meditation is going to help you feel more grounded, more energized, more spacious.
Right.
But you are consistently putting off the meditation practice, and what you're saying to yourself is, I'm already too tired for this. I already don't have enough space for this. Like, all the things that you want, right, are the reasons why you can't have the practice.
Yes, yes. And I mean, call it ego, you know, call it the story, and I'm just believing it, and it's not serving me at all.
Yeah. Okay, good. Good. Hold on to that. We're gonna go further with that in a couple of moments. Good. Mm. I'm going to take some more because these are all such great examples. Who is this? 2809.
Hi, Joanna. It's Connie. Can you hear me?
I can. Hi.
Hi. I have a tendency to overschedule myself and then become overwhelmed and ineffective and just burnt out, but I have this weird belief that if I have too much spaciousness in my schedule, I'll become lazy and inefficient, actually. I sometimes feel like I get more done when I'm busy because I'm in a rhythm and a flow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Yeah, it's such a, it's like, yes, you do. And also I think what I'm hearing is that after a certain point, you actually become inefficient. And also you're not getting something that you want, which is the space.
Yes.
And again, such an interesting thing. I need to do this to be efficient. But then at a certain point, that belief is actually what's creating inefficiency. For you.
Exactly. And my adrenals are shot.
Yeah, which is, you know, pretty common. And just this issue that you're bringing up, like this pattern is so common for so many of us in today's world. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. And I'll take one more. Sophie.
Oh, hi, Joanna. I wanted to ask, with the self-sabotage, a lot of things have kind of unraveled in my life over the past few months. And, yeah, for my pattern, I would say I've been actually questioning a lot. Like, do I even want to, do coaching anymore? And I was wondering if that was a self-sabotage
tendency to make decisions about things and then question them.
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah. Then I'd say likely, without me knowing more of the details, but likely there's a self-sabotage pattern in there, right? It's like, I want to get it right. I have to choose the right path. Okay, I'm choosing this. Oh, no, I haven't chosen right. Or this is going to take too much work. Or, you know, whatever the belief underneath it is for you, right? And then you start questioning it, and then you're back to square one again.
Yeah, that's exactly what's going on. That's like, yeah, you pretty much totally read my mind. Yeah. It's the, did I choose right? Yes.
Yeah, good. So I'm so glad. This is one of those that, like, I'm so glad you can see it, because it actually says so much about your readiness to shift it, that you're willing to see it and then share it here, right? This is one of those things that, like, if you really weren't ready to shift it, you just wouldn't even go there. It would, you know, be like, no, I just don't think I want to do this coaching thing, right? But the fact that you're seeing it says a lot about readiness to shift. So that's really good.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Okay, these are such great examples. Let's take this all a step further now. So you're probably already starting to see this just from the work that we've done so far and from the great examples that everybody gave, but I want to just really kind of pull this out, because I want you to understand this for yourself and when you're coaching others. Self-sabotage, not always, but most of the time, happens in a cycle. It happens in a cycle, and that's why I call it the wheel of self-sabotage. So let me lay out the cycle for you. Let me just break it down so that you can really understand it. So think of it as a wheel. Think of it as a circular. So I'm just going to start, you know, because there's no start or end to a wheel, I'm a little bit going to pick like a random part of the wheel. But anyway, it usually starts in some way. It's usually rooted in this first piece, which is there. You've got a negative thought, or we should say a limiting thought, a negative thought, or belief, or you've got a fear, or there's some kind of resistance in your blind spot. So the cycle always happens, always starts kind of with one of those things, a negative thought or belief, a fear, or some kind of resistance that you can't see. It's in your blind spot. What that leads to is an action that is self-sabotaging. So the negative thought or the belief or the fear, the resistance in the blind spot leads you or your client to take an action that is self-sabotaging. They take the self-sabotaging action, which then leads to the next part of the cycle or the wheel, which is that whatever that self-sabotage action is, it has a consequence. It has a result. And whatever the result of that self-sabotaging action, what it does is it mirrors and provides evidence that the original fear or negative thought is real. So they take an action, and then that leads to a result or a consequence that then shows, oh my gosh, my fear was right in the first place. And then what that does, that leads to an accelerated strengthening of the original negative thought or fear or resistance in the blind spot, which then leads to another self-sabotage action, which then leads to a consequence from that action that provides evidence that the fear or the limiting thought is real, which leads to more strengthening of the fear and the negative thought, which leads to more self-sabotaging action, and on and on and on. The wheel turns. So let me give you two examples of what I just laid out with some particulars so that you can really see it. So here's one example. Let's say that someone has the limiting belief that it's really hard for me to date. Like, my dating life doesn't work out, and just dating is like not ever going to work for me, right? So then that leads to a self-sabotage action, and maybe that self-sabotage action is, even though, you know, they've heard that dating websites can be effective, they just don't engage in that at all. They don't put themselves out there. So what's the result from that? Well, they don't have any dates. So then that reinforces the original thought or belief of it's hard for me to date, I'm not good at dating, dating doesn't work out for me. It gets even stronger, this belief, which leads to the next action, which is they happen to get set up on a blind date, but they end up acting like a total weirdo on the date. They're just, whatever it is, they do weird things on the date. And then the result is they don't get asked out on a second date. And then that reinforces the it's hard for me to date, I'm not good at dating. It reinforces that mentality. And then the next time they get set up on a blind date, because now this I'm not good at dating, it has become so strong because of the history now of, you know, and what they've seen, they may not even go on that date at all, right? So that's one example of the wheel, and I'll give you another example. Let's say a client starts off with the belief or the thought that I really suck at sales conversations. Like, I am not meant to do sales conversations. I suck at it. That belief or that fear may lead to the self-sabotaging action of a referral comes in, but they just totally mess it up. Like they're on the sales enrollment conversation, and because they're thinking in their head, it's I just suck at sales, they don't lead it the right way. They don't make the sale. So they don't make the sale. That's the result. And then that reinforces the original belief that I suck at sales. I'm just not cut out to do it. And now because that belief is even stronger, the next time a prospect situation comes up, maybe they don't even make the ask to have the sales call. And then as a result of that, they don't have any new clients. And that then even deeper reinforces this belief, I suck at sales. Obviously I suck at sales because I don't have any clients. See, here's the evidence. So in essence, when you're on that wheel of self-sabotage, it doesn't naturally allow for a positive outcome to happen. It doesn't naturally allow for progress to be made, for goals to be reached. And if a client is on that wheel, it ensures that they're going to stay in self-sabotage mode ad nauseum. The whole entire wheel is really, I don't know what the right word is here, but it's really kind of sinister in a way, because the cycle produces evidence that isn't actually real, but it masquerades as real. The cycle produces evidence that isn't real, but it masquerades as real. It's like a downward spiral that cycles in on itself. So, taking this wheel into consideration, let's pause here for a few moments on some inner exploration. First question, pick an instance where the cycle or the wheel of self-sabotage plays out for you. And I just want you to almost like map it out, like the cycle I just mapped out. Map out one of your wheels of self-sabotage for yourself. I like to do it like, write something and then draw an arrow down, you know, and write the next, right? So what's the belief? And then the self-sabotaging action, you know, just map out one of those wheels for you that's maybe been happening lately or at some point for you. I'll give you a minute with that one so you can really map out that entire wheel. And maybe you can even see through, like, how many cycles you've been, right? How many times it's rotated for you. And take another moment with that. Next question. What thoughts or feelings or mood do you experience when you're on the wheel? What does that experience feel like for you now that you can kind of see it maybe from a higher perspective? Because when we're on that wheel, it's like there's also an energy to that wheel that we get caught up in. Where are the thoughts, the feelings, the energy, the mood that you experience when you're on the wheel? And the next question, this is like an experimental question. You may or may not get an answer to this one, but let's put it out there as, you know, something interesting to think about. What negative thoughts or fears or resistances have evolved for you simply because of being on the wheel? So what I mean by that are, you know, the wheel often starts because of an original limiting belief or fear or thought that was probably modeled for you or derived or rooted from when you were a youngster, whatever it is. But that thought or fear gets you on the wheel. But if you've been on the wheel for a couple of cycles or for a while, it, because of the false evidence that you're creating, it can oftentimes create offshoot negative thoughts or fears, right? Like new limiting beliefs and fears. So think about the particular wheel that you've been focusing on for yourself. Have there been new belief, negative or limiting beliefs or thoughts or fears or resistances that have literally been created because you've put yourself on that wheel and have stayed on it? So I'll give you an example of this that will maybe help. So one of my wheels, which is not a wheel so much anymore, although I do slip into it sometimes, is staying up late. So the original reason why I started consistently staying up late was because of this feeling like I had to do more. I'd always have to do more. I have to get more done. That's the way to, like, keep everything together. So that was the original belief. But the more that I stayed up late, the more it made me tired during the day and not as efficient during the day, which would make me, you know, stay up later. But the other thing that it created was this idea for me that there's not enough time in the day, right? And that was a little bit new. I didn't start off with there's not enough time in the day, but it was just because I was overworking and then getting tired in the day. There wasn't enough time in the day. And then the other kind of new belief that it started creating for me, because then the staying up late was after I did all the work that I wanted to do, I still had to, like, give myself time to watch TV and to rest. There wasn't enough time during the day just for me, so I needed to take that at night. So are there new beliefs or thoughts that kind of really, or fears that got created simply because you put yourself on that wheel? All right, so let's pause here. I'd love to hear some shares either about your wheel or answers to any of the questions I just asked or what you're starting to see or understand about this wheel or any questions that you have about being on the wheel. Kara.
Okay. I'm going to out myself here. Social media is like a place for my wheel activity. It usually starts with like the belief that I'm like, I don't have anything important to say. And even if I do, it takes too much time. That's kind of like a side thing. Then I say nothing, and then I feel kind of unexpressed, and the energy is like blah and uninspired. Mm-hmm. And then that usually leads to like, well, it doesn't matter anyway, and I'm not really that into it. And then the big new belief that gets created is that I'll never be able to make the impact that I feel called to. Mm-hmm. I haven't figured out how to like get into my groove on social media.
It's thank you for sharing that. Thank you for outing yourself. It's like we can just see, again, I don't know if there's a better word than sinister, but we can actually see how sinister just this little thing is. Like, first just starting, like, I'm not going to post today, right? How it can become, once you're on the wheel for a couple of cycles, this much bigger thing, both in your psyche as well as in the actual impact it's making in your life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it bleeds into like, well, then I'll never be, the person I feel called to be in the world.
That's the thing, right? It's like these subtle little self-sabotage things sometimes cause way more trouble than those bigger, more explicit things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad you can see it. And again, promise you we're going to get to solutions and ways through, but I'm going to leave you hanging on for a little bit. Okay, good.
Right.
Sophie.
Oh, Joanna, this was so helpful with the coaching thing I was just telling you about. My limiting belief was that I can never make money doing what I love.
Mm-hmm.
What I'll do is, I'll buy things that promise to make it happen quick, but then it's like in my heart, I don't feel like it's actually the thing that will help me. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it's because it's not very suitable for me. It won't work out well. And then I'll feel depressed and like a failure. And then I'll give up. That's how it works.
Yep. You give up.
Yeah.
Until the cycle rolls around again and you probably buy that next thing that actually isn't suitable for you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And on the wheel you go over and over again.
Yeah. So it proves what I think. And then I start questioning myself. So this is so helpful. Yeah.
Good. I'm so glad. Yeah. I can see that things are already clicking for you. Good, good, good. I'd love to hear a couple more shares. Or if you're feeling confused or have questions for me on it, start to. else? What are you seeing? What have you guys got? Jessica. Jessica.
Hi, Joanna.
Hi.
So I have a belief that I have to finish like all the chores now before I can relax or before I can do the important stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like I will go crazy and spend like, actually I'm a little bit doing it now because I took 2 weeks off from work and I spent all of Monday and all of today organizing all my kids and my husband's stuff to get it off of the floor because my, you know, feeling is that I'll be stressed and confused if I'm living in this chaotic environment with stuff all around.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize I do that with work too. Like if I have sort of a long, boring task, I'll be like, I have to finish this all before whatever.
Yeah.
And so I jam all the stuff into my schedule and I don't take time to work out or relax. I mean, I do those things a lot, but I sometimes will do them less than I want. Mm-hmm. And the result is I feel stressed and overtired and I have no time for myself. And then I feel kind of angry.
Mm-hmm.
And then that totally reinforces my belief that, you know, I'm going to be like,
the only way,
you know,
to
that my environment is chaotic and that I'm stressed and that the only way I can calm myself down is to have everything be really, you know, done. And
Yeah, that's a biggie. I have been on that wheel before. I know that one well, especially as a Virgo. I have been prone to that. I'm so glad you can see what's going on there for you. So important.
Yeah, and it definitely, I was looking, and it does lead to other, like, oh, I'm so unproductive, I don't make progress, I'm like, you know.
Yeah, it starts to grow tentacles when you're on the wheel for a while.
Totally.
Yeah, good.
Totally.
I'm glad you can
feel
that. Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, so let's continue. So now that we understand this wheel, this cycle, and what can happen for us and our clients, then, well, the next question is, well, how do you get off the wheel? That's the golden question. How do you get off the wheel? Well, what's needed to get off the wheel, and I can just tell you, I haven't ever seen it be able to be done any other way. What's needed is a pattern break. Think about it. When you're like, you know, when you're just going round and round and round and round, it's not going to help to just slow down the round, you know, the wheel. You actually need, and it's not going to help to speed up the wheel, that's for sure. What you actually need is a break in the wheel. There needs to be a point in what I laid out for you, the different phases of it, where the cycle gets broken. So through looking at resistance archetypes, through looking at befriend your fear, through looking at rewiring negative thought patterns, we've actually already learned a number of ways so far to break the pattern at the thought or the fear or the resistance part of the cycle, right? You can use any of those techniques, and that can help break the pattern at the thought or fear or resistance phase of the cycle. But the other way that the cycle or the wheel needs a break is it needs a break at the action level, right, where the actual self sabotage actions are being committed. What I've really learned just over time and working with people and also working with myself is that the break on the thought level is really important and is really valuable, and we need it 110%, but it is most effective when we can also break on the action level and have the two work together. Here's the, and what I've also learned is that just breaking on the thought level or the fear level or the energetic level without pairing it with breaking on the action, you know, in the action phase, it usually isn't enough. In some ways, it's harder to do the inner work, right? Because we have to do the inner work. But in a lot of ways, breaking at the action level, that outer, can be harder. And the reason it can sometimes be harder is because it's uncomfortable, right? So, you know, we can take Jessica as an example. She's been doing this, like, you know, cleaning up, organizing before she gets to anything else for so long that actually breaking that habit on the action level is, even though she's done the inner work, you know, she can do the inner work and see and do the befriend your fear process and all that, which you want to do with your clients. But even when you do that work, there's still going to be a discomfort. It's going to feel uncomfortable to change the action, the habitual pattern, outer pattern. So in order to break the wheel, we have to be willing to be uncomfortable. And I'm sharing this with you and making this explicit for you. And, of course, for most of you on this call, you already know this. But the reason why I'm sharing this is because this is a piece of creating awareness that we need to also create for our clients. What I mean by that is, you know, if you've got a client and you can see that they're on the wheel of self-sabotage, the first thing you probably want to do is create awareness around the wheel itself. Right, help them see that they've been on this hamster wheel and in this cycle and on this wheel. Just the awareness itself is going to start moving them towards some change, right? It can be so powerful. Hopefully some of you have already experienced it on this call today, just to be able to see what's going on here for yourself, right? You want to create that, and then you probably want to do the befriend your fear process next, or the rewiring negative thought process. You know, whatever makes the most sense for that for that person in that moment. But then when you get to the action pattern break, before you even get to them breaking the actions, you probably want to help create awareness and share that it can be uncomfortable. But that discomfort is what's going to be required here. Now, this is important. Discomfort is different from pain. And the pain body that I was sharing about when we looked at rewiring your negative thought patterns. So if you remember back to rewiring, I was sharing that human beings gravitate towards the pain body. They do. But the other thing that's true about human beings is that they avoid discomfort. So what's the difference between discomfort and pain? Discomfort is the tension that you feel when you're in a growth process or building resilience. Pain is the tension that you feel when you're in stagnation. Again, I'm not talking about, like, you know, I'm talking about pain in a very specific way here, in that pain body way, I'm going to say that again. Discomfort is that tension that you feel when it's time to change something, right? When you're in a growth process, a transformation process, and something is shifting and changing, resilience, right? Then resilience is required. Pain, that pain body is the tension from when there's stagnation. People generally really hate to be uncomfortable. And that's because they associate discomfort with the pain instead of with building a resilience muscle. If you can help your clients become aware that when they break the action pattern, like, yes, it might feel uncomfortable, but that the discomfort is actually part of that growth process. It's part of the process of building resilience. It will help them manage the discomfort a little more. Think about anything in your life that you've ever learned or that you've ever been able to change, or, you know, any time that you've really grown. Chances are for many of those lessons or many of those growth experiences that there's been some kind of discomfort. It's like growing pains, right? Like it's almost like it's the process. It's part of that process of growth. I'll give you some examples from my life. When I first started my business, I didn't think of myself as entrepreneurial at all. I mean, I had my master's in art history. I was like a hippy dippy, you know, I knew nothing about business. I had no idea why I had like quit this amazing career to start my own business. I had to go through the discomfort, like that deeply uncomfortable feeling of like, I'm not an entrepreneur. Why am I an entrepreneur? Like, why am I doing this entrepreneurial thing when I'm not an entrepreneur? I had to feel that tension, and I had to keep on working through it in order to get to where I am now, which is that I can see that I actually really am entrepreneurial. Same thing with abundance for me. Because of my family history, because of my cultural history, because of like the immigrant mentality in my family, because of so many reasons, I just really, for the first almost three decades of my life, I really deeply believed that I'm just not the kind of person that attracts abundance or that can have a lot of abundance. And now my life is incredibly abundant. And I have a lot of abundance and I can see it, but I had to go through that tension, the discomfort, and work at it. Like it wasn't easy breezy, right, to get to this place now where not only do I have abundance, but I can really own it and see that I am the kind of person that attracts abundance. So let's pause here and let me ask you a couple of inner exploration questions. What is your relationship to discomfort and being uncomfortable? And what are your actual like limiting beliefs about discomfort? So up until now, what's been your relationship with discomfort? Well, and I won't even say limiting beliefs. What has been your relationship to discomfort, and what are some beliefs that you have around being uncomfortable? give you another moment with that. So what's been your historic relationship with discomfort and any beliefs that you've had around discomfort? Next question, list one or two times in your life where you've actually been willing to be uncomfortable and you've reaped the results, the positive results of it. When are one or two times in your life where you've actually been willing to be uncomfortable and you've reaped the results? And I don't know if this is helpful, but I once heard someone compare being uncomfortable in a good way to holding a brick between your legs. You're like sitting and just like having to hold that brick there until the shift happens, like, you know, continuing to do that stretch. So when are one or two times where you've allowed yourself to be uncomfortable and you've really reaped the positive results? Next question, actually I'm going to leave this one for some homework. Instead, the next question I want to ask you is, let me see how I ask this question. How able have you been to lovingly invite your clients into being uncomfortable in order to change a habit or a pattern? Like on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, how able have you been, or how, I guess able is the best word, to just hold space and do maybe a little pushing lovingly for your clients to be uncomfortable? Okay, so a couple of notes on how we can support our clients to become more comfortable with discomfort or willing to endure discomfort when they're breaking a pattern. Number one, if you remember back, I think it was our strategizing module, to stretch, risk, or die, right? That's a great resilience-building exercise, and an exercise that helps people just push the edges to get just a little uncomfortable to break patterns, right? So I won't, you know, go back into the re-explaining all of stretch, risk, or die. You can listen to that in strategizing. But essentially, you know, what it is helping clients articulate and create action steps that aren't comfortable for them, that are either in their stretch zone or in their risk zone, but not in their I'd rather die than do this zone. And, you know, when you put it in that stretch, risk, or die context for clients, they can see, okay, I'm not going to die. It's not going to be so uncomfortable that I'm going to die from this, right? Like, I can take a stretch. I can take a risk. It's okay to be a little uncomfortable. Another strategy to help clients get more comfortable with discomfort or more willing to be in some discomfort to help get them off this wheel is to create awareness with them around how their comfort is actually causing them pain. right? So when you can create that awareness, it can help activate or motivate to start moving out of the comfort and to you know, build resilience around the discomfort. Another strategy is to create awareness for clients so that they can see places in their life where they've been uncomfortable, but that the discomfort has created positive outcomes and strength and resilience. When they see that, they'll see that discomfort isn't going to break them. And then again, another strategy is to normalize the discomfort of the growth process. Always want to normalize as much as possible. All right, the next piece that I want to touch on that's related to the wheel of self-sabotage, but also related to so many of the other topics we've been looking at in this bigger section of the training, is shame. And the role of shame, especially when someone is caught on the wheel. So in my experience over the last 20 years with so many people, so many clients and so many students, I can say without a doubt that shame is actually more derailing than fear, than negative beliefs, or any misaligned actions. And we looked at this a little bit in our discussion of fear. Shame, when someone is in shame, it is extremely powerful. It holds a power over them. And oftentimes, when someone is on the wheel of self-sabotage, shame is kind of part of what's driving the show in one way or another. It may not have started with that original negative belief or fear or resistance, but because they've been on the wheel now and have been self-sabotaging for a while, shame is one of those byproducts that have been developed by being on this wheel. The more that someone takes self-sabotaging actions, the more likely they are to feel shame about what's happened, which in turn also just reinforces, it's another one of those pieces that reinforces the beliefs that are driving the wheel. Hope that makes sense. You can ask me later if that doesn't. So I really believe that one of our sacred functions as coaches is to support our clients in releasing shame. The less shame that can be involved in goal achievement, then the more likely the goals are going to be achieved, and the more likely that they're going to be achieved in empowering ways instead of fear-based ways or pressure-filled ways. So how do you help clients release shame? Well, that's bigger than the space that we have today, and it really involves knowing how to work with shadow, because oftentimes the parts of ourselves that we put into shadow that we've disowned are the ones that we're most ashamed of. But all that being said, I want to give you some pointers on helping clients release shame as it might come up in this wheel. So first and most important is the container, right? Having your coaching container be an environment where your client feels comfortable sharing their shame with you, or having the container tight enough and safe enough that if you detect there is shame happening for your client, that you can bring it up, that you can name it, that you can create awareness about it without triggering even more shame, right? So that goes back to all of the energetics. That's number one. If you've created an environment where the client feels comfortable sharing with you, then just the act of sharing about the shame, just the act of expressing the things, you know, your client expressing the pieces that she feels ashamed of in your sacred container can help deflate the shame. You can think of it almost like Catholic confession. So I'm not Catholic, so I've never actually done it, but I've always just been kind of in awe of the process. We have something like that in Judaism too, like on the high holidays we have full liturgies just, you know, naming everything that we feel shame about. And, you know, so just the idea around it is if you've got a safe container and a safe space to just name those things that you're ashamed of, they're no longer so burdensome on you and so burdensome on your heart. And I really feel like the coaching relationship and the coaching container is a powerful opportunity for this. And then the other piece that can be really helpful, I'll give you another pointer here, is when your client, you know, quote unquote, confesses whatever it is that they're ashamed of, for you as the coach to make explicit, to really be really, really clear as you're holding that space, all of the goodness and all of the strengths that you see in your client. In other words, for you to be really explicit and clear that knowing these, seeing whatever these things are, you know, that she feels ashamed of, doesn't change what you see as essential goodness and strength in your client. That she still is that, because oftentimes, like what's at the core. When someone feels shame, I'm simplifying this a little bit, but really, you know, like in the most simple way, when we feel shame about something, the inherent like belief that's at the center of that is I am bad. So we have the opportunity as coaches to really correct some of that dynamic. Okay, so I'll open up for takeaways and Q&A in just a few moments, but I just want to review the process one more time. So if you're working with a client and you are doing, you know, deep listening, you're using your deep listening skills, and you see, and you might see this in one session, or it might be like over a period of sessions, right, that you start to see, wow, my client is on a wheel of self-sabotage, then here are some things that you want to do. So number one, as I said earlier, create awareness about the wheel, right? Like really lay out the wheel for her and help her see each of the phases of the wheel and how she's round and round and round and what the impact has been. So much of the work that we did together on this call today about just creating awareness about the wheel itself. Once you create awareness around the wheel itself, then you're probably going to want to make the first break in the wheel at the thought or fear or resistance level and take them through one of the processes that we've previously learned in Sacred Depths, Befriend Your Fear, Rewire, you know, whatever it is, to open up more so they can see, like, where this even originated from in the first place, create awareness there. From there, you want to make your second break in the wheel on the action level. You want to create awareness around the discomfort of taking new actions. Also create awareness around the importance of how the outer action helps shift the inner even more, and then the inner work helps shift the outer, how they really work together. You want to strategize what the little baby step, you know, the stretch or the risks are going to be, and you're going to want to track them closely in that way. And then through it, any shame that has come up, you may want to work with that as well. Okay, so in a moment, I'll open up for, well, first, let me ask you guys, you know, we looked at a lot on today's call. What's your big takeaway from our call today? What are you taking away for yourself that's most important? In terms of homework, we don't have a worksheet this week. But I will post some additional journaling questions in the Facebook group if you want to go a little bit further with some inner work. If you're working with a coaching partner over this week, focus on the wheel of self-sabotage. Take a look at a place where your client, where your partner is stuck. Or not moving forward, and see if you guys can apply the wheel to it together and coach your client, your partner, through it. And then the other piece of homework is if you're working with some clients who have been particularly stuck and you sense there's this wheel is at play for them, take a few moments outside of session to see if you can plot out their particular wheel, what's been going on for them. And then consider bringing that into the conversation when you speak with them. All right. So before we wrap, I'd love to hear questions and takeaways. Tina.
Hi, Joanna. I'll give a takeaway, and then I have a quick question. So I think the biggest takeaway for me was, number one, being aware of being on the wheel itself. I know that's obvious, but it's sometimes not when we're on the wheel. So that's a big one. And then also making the first break. So I don't know if I really quite understood that. So needing a break pattern, is that specifically like going into talking about the pain and discomfort about the growth process? Is that what you meant more of?
For example, with, you know, what you brought forward earlier with your meditation practice.
Yeah.
So on that thought level, you know, the thought, I forget exactly what you said, like the thought that was fueling it and getting, you know, strengthened through the wheel, you might want to go through the rewire your negative thought process on that one.
Okay.
Or the befriend your fear. But then on the action level, you need the pattern break for you, for example, would be to just start with twice over this next week to commit to meditating for maybe no more than 5 minutes or 10 minutes.
I see.
Just looking at the thought or the fear itself isn't going to be enough here. We want to start to poke holes at the action pattern as well.
Oh, thank you. Okay, so creating an actual achievable action. Got it.
Exactly, like a little bit of a stretch, one that's not going to, you know, like be too hard that you're not going to achieve it, but you want to start poking holes
Okay, I see. Okay, thank you. This is huge. I'm still processing it. Probably why a lot of people are silent. This is a big. It's a big piece. It's wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. I hope also you guys can see, like I said in the beginning, this is where we can begin to converge some of the different tools, you know, more advanced tools that we've been talking about the last month or two. Anyone else? Any takeaways that you want to share or questions that you have for me on anything that we covered today? Star two. Nope. All right, then I will trust that you guys are good. I'd love to hear just as you process more, anything else that comes through, any other questions, keep me posted. And I hope you have a wonderful week. We're off next week. Next week is one of my weeks that I take to just work on curriculum and marketing and, you know, work on my business instead of in my business. But we'll be back in 2 weeks. I'll talk to you then. Bye.
The moderator has left the conference.